there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 220, Infinite Eyes, read by Mitchell Two. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, an urban myth might turn out to be true. "Can you tell me what happened, Mr. Vento?" Olivia asked, placing a small digital audio recorder on the well-worn fake Spanish colonial coffee table.
"Please, just call me Lucas."
The old man, wearing just a white t-shirt and shorts, despite the bite of the late fall day, insisted.
"No problem, Lucas," Olivia corrected herself. "I've read most of the online posts about your experience, but it's all second or third hand. I really want to hear the story from you. You know how things get embellished."
"Would you like a coffee?" he offered.
Her eyes were drawn to the open can of instant on the kitchen counter behind him, and she politely declined.
"I'm flattered you'd fly so far to meet me," he admitted. "I hope you're not disappointed. I don't have witnesses or photos or video, it's just my word."
Olivia shrugged and began to extract a tablet from a beat-up backpack.
"I've been researching the stories since the first one began to appear on the net in the late 90s,
Olivia explained, placing the tablet on her lap, then reaching over to switch the recorder on.
"So I have a good sense for the genuine ones. If you'd been all over the paranormal forums and had a huge social media following, I wouldn't be here.
She hesitated and looked at Lucas.
"You're okay with me recording this?"
"Sure, I don't mind. You're the first person who's been interested enough to interview me. Since it happened, I've read other accounts. I even tried to reach out to a few of them, but
they're more interested in promoting their story than getting to the truth, right?"
Olivia nodded distractedly, poking at her tablet.
"I've been through every report of an encounter that's appeared online," she reflected. "Most of them are made up. The usual paranormal claptrap about bad seeds, the spawn of evil kind of thing. That's all urban legend, and every copycat story uses the same elements. Yours is different. That's why your case came to my attention and why I flew out here to meet you."
"Okay, then. Do you want me to just start?"
Lucas asked, looking visibly uncomfortable.
"I'm pressing the record button now, but take your time."
"Well," Lucas sighed, "I know it's a cliche, but it was night and it was storming." He laughed.
"Really, it was. Check the weather for the day." "Believe me, I will,"
Olivia smiled ruefully.
"Please, continue."
Okay then.
Lucas cleared his throat, took a breath, then started.
"It was in late November, about 2 years ago, and the days were already growing short. So short that by the time I had cleaned up after dinner and was taking the garbage out, it was already dark. An early snowfall had buried the front yard, and my hope for a short winter. I hadn't yet taken my heavy clothes out of the closet, so I was squishing through the soggy snow, feeling the bite of the wind through the light nylon of my summer jacket, and the stabs of cold from the wet, slushy snow which had found its way into my low-top loafers, soaking my ankles. The recycling bin was behind the garage. To get to it, I had to pass between a tall fence and the side of the house. It's narrow there, so it's dark, even on a summer day, and of course the security light didn't turn on. I could just make out its form, and noted with some frustration that snow had accumulated on the thing's motion sensor. I've been meaning to do something about that, he added guiltily. The wind had managed to whip snow into the narrow space, and a drift had accumulated against the gate. Shivering, I put the bags of plastic wrappers and cardboard down so I could lay my shoulder into it. At first, the gate refused to budge. The bottom was jammed in the snow. Backing up, I charged it. The gate suddenly gave way, vibrating so hard that it made some snow slide off the garage roof and into the space between the collar of my jacket and the back of my neck. I ignored a cold, wet riverlet that began to trickle down my back and pushed on to the recycle bins. Using a forearm, I brushed the snow off the closest one and dropped my bags in.
Mister?
It sounded like a kid and made me jump and swivel around. Standing behind me were two children. One was maybe 12 and the other 8 or 9. It was hard to tell in the dark. I didn't remember hearing them approach, and I couldn't see any footprints in the fresh snow to indicate where they had come from. But I suppose I could have missed that. There are no streetlights in the lane. Both kids wore hoodies, so it was hard to see their faces, and like me, neither was dressed for the weather.
Mister, we're cold,
the older one explained.
We've lost our friend,
the younger one added plaintively.
Can we come in, warm up, and use your phone?
They both inquired at once. My first impulse was to oblige. Two young kids, after dark, out in a snowstorm. It wasn't normal, right? Yet, I hesitated. There had been reports in the neighborhood of older people being approached by teens, then rolled for a few bucks. I tried to peer into the darkness to see if these two were just an unwilling vanguard for a gang, but there was no one else around. The three of us were alone.
We need to get inside,
the older one insisted in a more aggressive tone. You shouldn't be out here alone, just like that, I scolded. Do your parents know where you are? Give me their number, and I'll call them on my cell. There was something deep down in my subconscious that pleaded with me not to allow them in. So I reached into my pocket to pull out my phone. While I fumbled the thing on with my numb fingers, there was a momentary gust of wind which whipped up a local blizzard from the powdery snow. When it cleared, both of them were gone. I stood there, alone, wet feet, growing colder by the second, shivering and confused. Had I imagined the kids? No, I could see the marks in the snow where they had stood. I was worried they might freeze and trudged around in the lane looking for them. Finally, my hands began to burn with the cold, and my shivering got worse, so I was forced to give up. The next morning, after the snow had stopped, I went out to the lane. There was nothing to see. Even my footsteps had been erased by the wind. Lucas paused and took a sip of his now tepid instant coffee. Olivia used the break in the story to question him.
So you didn't see their faces, and there was no physical evidence you met anyone.
That's right, but I know it wasn't a hallucination. Those kids were real, because I encountered them again. Even though I didn't see their faces, they had a presence I can never forget, and I never want to experience again.
Interesting. This is where your story starts to diverge from the others,
Olivia noted, poking at something on her tablet.
Most are a single encounter.
Lucas shrugged. I wouldn't know about that. It's just how things happened. The next time was about 6 months later, in the spring. I had mostly forgotten about that November night. No one had mentioned any missing kids, so I figured they had got home okay. I think it was maybe an hour after dark. The sunset in April is between 8 and 9, so it might have been 10. It was midweek, not the time you'd expect to have kids coming around. I think I might have been watching a movie or reading. I can't quite remember. Anyway, there was a knock at the front door, which was strange because the doorbell worked and the new security light I had installed on the porch after the first incident hadn't been triggered. I was annoyed and decided not to answer. Whomever they were would eventually give up and go away. I hadn't been expecting anyone. However, I suddenly had an overwhelming compulsion to see who was there. They knocked again, this time louder and longer. I tried resisting the urge to answer and ignored the knocking. Then, the pounding started and I lost my temper. I stormed to the door and pulled it open, ready to confront the annoying, unwelcome visitor. At first, I didn't see anyone, and stood there breathing heavily, trying to calm down. Then, in the shadows of my porch, I sensed their presence and shuddered. They walked into the light spilling from the door. Both wore hoodies, again, pulled up so it was hard to see their faces. The older and taller of the two, a girl, I guessed from the tone of her voice, walked up to me and tried to peer into the house.
"We're lost,"
she announced, defiantly, as if she was expecting me to challenge her. And then her tone changed, and she almost pleaded.
"Please, let us use your phone."
Like my first encounter, my gut screamed at me not to let them in. "Wait here," I told her, "and I'll get my cell phone."
"No, we need to come in,"
she countered, forcefully.
"Can I use your washroom?"
The smaller, younger one stepped closer, leaning to one side so she could see around me into the house, where it hovered like a moth drawn toward a flame.
"We can't come in unless you invite us, and you can only help us if we're inside,"
the older one insisted. I found that I couldn't take my eyes off the kids. I suddenly found myself outside my body, watching in horror and astonishment as words something or someone else had thought of formed in my mouth. "Yes, of course. Please, come in. There's a landline on the small table, and the washroom is at the end of the hall," I said, and stood to one side while they crossed the threshold into my front hall. I felt a cold shiver run through me as if someone had walked over my grave. The younger one raced to the washroom. The older one, the girl, stopped just inside the door and looked around, hungrily, then started to explore my living room, as if she had never seen the contents of a house before. She picked things up and turned them over and seemed especially fascinated by the remote, poking at buttons until the TV turned on. She jumped and dropped the thing on the floor as if it was possessed.
"No, leave it on,"
she demanded and turned away before I could see her face. The bathroom door suddenly burst open, and the younger one sprinted down the hall to join us. They huddled together, muttering excitedly. I couldn't make out what they were saying, but sensed it was about me. "The phone is over there on the table," I finally interrupted, pointing to the old handset I hadn't bothered changing in a quarter of a century. They stopped nattering, then tentatively approached the ancient device like it was a coiled viper. "It's an old touch tone," I explained. "You pick up that thing on the top. It's called the handset. Wait to hear a tone, then type in the number you want to connect with. If you tell me your parents' number, I can call them for you." The older one held up a hand and objected.
"No, we need to call them ourselves."
I shrugged, but I doubt either of them noticed. Both were intently concentrating on the phone's keypad. The younger one picked up the receiver experimentally and listened, while the older one pecked at the keys. The number seemed ridiculously long, and I was about to intervene when the young one spoke.
"It's us."
She nodded, as if listening, then hung up. Both turned to face me.
"Our family is coming to pick us up," they said together.
I hadn't heard them mention an address or description of the house.
"How do they know where you are?" I asked. Instead of answering, both pulled their hoods off. It was the first time I could see their faces.
Shock arced through me. It was as if their pupils had grown to engulf even the whites of their eyes, and I felt myself being drawn into a hungry nothingness devoid of humanity. I wanted to look away, but found I couldn't, and instantly knew the horrible truth. It, they, whatever they were, wanted me. I don't know how long I stood there, mesmerized by that void. It was like looking into the night sky between the stars and getting lost. "I'm not entirely sure of things from this point on," Lucas apologized.
"That's okay, Lucas. Just take your time and tell me everything you remember, even if it makes no sense,"
Olivia encouraged. The older man closed his eyes for a moment, then leaned forward in his chair. "Okay. As I remember it, sometime later, a long, black car pulled up in front of my house. It was sort of a cross between a stretch limo and a large SUV. We were standing on my front porch. I don't recall how we got there. The three of us were just standing there, staring at the street. Two tall, stick-like figures got out and opened the back doors.
"Our family," the older kid stated, matter-of-factly.
"They're grateful you helped us and have invited you to come along,"
the younger one added. I was horrified. Trapped in a body which no longer acknowledged my will, my legs simply moved and I found myself sitting in the back seat of their limo between the two soulless kids, each holding one of my arms. There was some type of opaque screen separating the passenger area from the front seats, so I couldn't see the driver and the parents, who hadn't seemed excited to see the two kids, or even concerned they had been lost. We drove out through an industrial park on a back road I didn't recognize. The streetlights thinned until, in the distance, they looked like constellations of stars as they silently glided past the windows. The car suddenly swung to the left, pushing me into the older of the two kids, and we found ourselves on a rough gravel road, leaving the hardtop behind. I wanted to grab for the door, pull it open, and jump, but my thoughts didn't seem to connect with my muscles. Instead, I sat, propped up between two kids, until the limo bounced to a stop and the motor turned off. The back door swung open, and we poured out into the cool spring evening. The leaves on the trees were still waiting for warmer weather to make their appearance. A light mist, maybe it was just dust kicked up from the car, I don't know which, reduced everything in the distance to ghostly shadows. All four of my captors, I'm calling them that because my free will had been taken away, just stood there and waited, looking up at an empty, opaque sky. After a few minutes, a beam of light shot out of nowhere, abruptly carving an illuminated circle on the uneven ground. They stepped into the light. I didn't want to follow, but my legs made the choice for me. There was a rising hum, which caused an excruciating pain in my head. I remember trying to plug my ears before my eardrums burst. Then everything suddenly went dark and silent. The next thing I can remember was lying on my back, immobilized, staring up at a blinding infinite white sky. I was in a place not anchored by geological space or time, and my body felt wrong. It was somehow smaller, compressed, ready to explode out of its wrapper like an overstuffed sausage. Unintelligible words drifted by. Several ghost-like silhouettes were murmuring in a language I felt I should know, but suddenly didn't understand. A guttural scream which never should have been able to form in a human throat left my mouth, and the voices immediately stopped. The shadow figures looked over at me, then quietly conferred. One in a familiar shape I had lived in all my life glared at me and laughed. I screamed again. Then, a light brighter than the sun swept me away, and I suddenly found myself shivering, standing in the snow, a fresh blanket of the stuff deep enough to pour in over the tops of my runners covered everything. I spun around. The occasional flake still casually drifted through the stark, cool glare of the LED streetlights, revealing there were no footprints along the sidewalk to mark my path. How long had I been standing there, I wondered briefly, before giving in to an overwhelming need to face the other direction. Like the needle of a compass, I swung toward the source of the attraction, and I found myself standing in front of an all-too-familiar door. Without thinking what I was doing, one fist began pounding on it until the porch light finally switched on. Something in my subconscious insisted I was at this particular house for a reason, but what? Why? I couldn't remember. The door finally opened, and I found myself staring up at my own weathered face. It's pretty late for someone your age to be out, the person who looked like me admonished sternly. I wanted to say, I've done enough, now give me my body back. Instead, I played my part and spoke the words which formed on my lips.
I'm lost. Can I come in and use your phone?
My old body hesitated, most likely feeling the fear of recognition and the consequences of granting my request.
I only need to use the phone. Please, it's getting colder, and I'm lost.
I insisted, feeling the fire of desperation beginning to burn deep inside. He stood there, looking down at me, and I willed him to obey.
You need to invite me in. You will invite me in.
I remember waking up in a hospital bed and asking what day it was. 6 months had passed since I had taken that ride with the kids and their so-called family. 6 months I have no recollection of. However, the hospital claimed my neighbor had found me the day before, lying on my porch, front door open, snow drifting in. They insist it was a small stroke. The doctors told me that the stroke affected my memory and sense of time. It had only been 2 days, but that's not true.
How can you be so sure, Lucas?
Olivia questioned. Standing up stiffly, he walked over to a planter by the front window. Because of this. Lucas pointed to a potted hyacinth. It was beginning to bloom when the kids visited me for the second time in the spring. It was still blooming when I returned from the hospital in October. Hyacinths only bloom in the spring, Olivia. It lost 6 months, like me, and has been out of sync ever since.
There might be other explanations.
Name one, Lucas challenged.
I don't know,
Olivia admitted,
but I'm sure someone will have an explanation. They always do. I just need to be able to respond. I'll check with a botanist when I get home.
Olivia picked up the recorder, turning it off.
I think I have enough information for now.
But you're not sure you believe me, right? Lucas accused.
I didn't say that,
she objected. I need to digest your story for a bit. Maybe do some more research, like checking to see if anyone else saw or helped those kids out. Another incident in the same area would help corroborate your story.
Lucas looked out the window at something, then abruptly whirled on Olivia. For a fraction of a second, she thought she saw anger and a dark, black liquid cascade through the older man's eyes before he turned away again. "I think it's time for you to go. You're a busy person. I'm sure you have an appointment somewhere else."
"But I don't have another..."
she began to protest. "You'll miss your connection. Now, go." Olivia wanted to stay and continue, but instead she found herself getting up, packing her things, and putting on her coat. Olivia's car headlights came on automatically as she drove through a heavily wooded area where the trees had grown up and over the road, forming a thick canopy which blocked out the fading late-day sun. Turning on adaptive cruise control, she reached into the back seat for her recorder to make sure she hadn't forgotten it, taking her eyes off the road for a moment. The car suddenly complained, braking hard to avoid something on the road ahead. Startled, she looked up. Standing in the glare of the headlights in the middle of the road were two kids in hoodies, one taller, one shorter. The taller one began to approach the car and took off its hood. Olivia found herself staring into its infinitely dark, inky eyes and screamed. Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com and take a listen to I Love This, You Should Too, a podcast about sharing the things you like with the people you love, regardless of how terrible you think their taste may be. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by the Calgary Foundation, proudly supporting community needs for 65 years. Empathy, kindness, generosity. We are united in our desire to give, to inspire hope, and transform the lives of people who are struggling in turbulent times. And the Calgary Foundation is here to help. From mental health programs to environmental causes, the Community Knowledge Center website features profiles of charitable organizations, all searchable by area of interest. Be inspired by compelling stories. Be informed of innovative work. Be responsive to the needs. To connect to hundreds of outstanding charitable organizations serving our community, visit ckc.calgaryfoundation.org. To learn more about the Calgary Foundation, visit calgaryfoundation.org. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by the Business Council of Alberta. If you are passionate about Alberta and its future, check out The Brief, an Alberta Better podcast series presented by the Business Council of Alberta. Co-hosts of The Brief, Scott Crockett and Brittany Brander, talk to Alberta's business leaders, innovators, disruptors, and entrepreneurs about the big challenges Albertans are facing. From unemployment to childcare to mental health and economic diversification. They also celebrate the stories of growth, innovation, and prosperity, and discover bold ideas that aim to make life better for Albertans. You can find new episodes of The Brief on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen at businesscouncilab.com/AlbertaBetterPodcast. That's businesscouncilab.com/AlbertaBetterPodcast. New episodes drop every other Tuesday. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month, around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.